The National Television Awards were held on Tuesday night. Phil, let's have that first slide up, please. And there was an interesting case of mistaken identity. Some minor celebrity whose name I've completely forgotten mistook Ice Dancing's Jane Torvill for Dragon Deborah Meaden. I'll leave that to your imagination to how they managed that. But actually, there was an even better story from earlier in the week, not about mistaken identity, but about unknown identity. An Australian couple holidaying in this country were travelling on a train back from Manchester to London. And they were getting quite irritated by some 20-somethings who were making a lot of noise in the sort of next set of seats. And at one point, two of the lads came over to apologise. And they said to the Australian couple, "Well, would you like to take a photo?" The Australian guy was a bit perplexed by that, but being very polite, he handed them his phone and said, "Yeah, do please take a photo. That'd be great." And one of the lads, in a slightly sort of French accent, sort of said, "No, with us." And again, the Australian was even more confused at this point, but again, being a very polite Australian, he said, "Okay, absolutely fine." And so the photo was duly taken. He sent that photo along with 5 or 6 pictures of a dog that they'd seen and were rather attracted to his son. His son then decided to send the photo around the world. Now, that photo may mean nothing to some of you, but some of you will recognise two of the lads who were creating a bit of a rumpus in the next door compartment, and they are Nemanja Matic on the left and Paul Pogba, the world's most expensive footballer, on the right in the middle there. Both play for Manchester United. I think the fact that the parents were more excited about the 6 pictures of the dog tells you something. But maybe even more charming is the reason why the 20-year-olds were being so loud in the next door set of seats. And the reason was they were playing Uno. It's rather sweet somehow. Anyway, maybe Uno sales will rocket as a result. Mistaken identity, unknown identity, it can be a cause for amusement. But sometimes it can be a bit more serious and have more longer-term consequences. Think of the crime drama when the character looking for help and assistance turns unwittingly to the serial killer. That's got a slightly different outcome, hasn't it? And Proverbs 9 offers us a similar question of identity. And the choice we make could have fatal consequences. Phil, you can take that away now. Thank you. Because for all of us, there's a choice to be made between wisdom and folly. A choice between life and death. So first of all then, we might easily mistake wisdom and folly. Hopefully you've got a heading sheet so you'll see where we're going. And there are a number of similarities here, aren't there? First of all, they both invite wisdom. She's built a house. The 7 pillars are nothing to do with sort of philosophy or anything, wisdom or anything like that. The 7 pillars simply say, it's a big house. That's all that's telling us. And she, verse 3, sent out her young women to call from the highest places in the town. The invitation is made. Folly makes her invitation in verse 13. She is seductive and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house, takes a seat on the highest place of the town, calling to those who pass by. She is loud and seductive. And if you've ever walked through a red light district in a European city, you've got exactly the picture. And their appeal is the same. Look at verse 4. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. To him who lacks sense, she says. And verse 16, exactly the same. So they both invite, and they both invite the same people, that is, us. In a sense, all are called. They go to the high place. Everybody is invited. But their particular focus, as we've seen in previous weeks, is on the simple. There in verse 4, and again, of course, in verse 16. And they're the main focus, because these are those whose way in life is not set. Now, we meet some of those. We meet the scoffer and the wicked in verse 7. They are set against wisdom. They want nothing to do with it. Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse. Whoever rebukes a wise or wicked man incurs injury. But then there's a very interesting little comment, a little lower down. Look at verse 15. Folly is calling to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way. It appears that some don't hear her either. Now, maybe these are the wise who just walk on straight by. Straight was a word we met earlier in terms of the one who is following wisdom's way. So both invite. And they both offer a banquet. In verse 2, Lady Wisdom has slaughtered her beast. She's mixed her wine. She set her table. She says, verse 5, come eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. And then look down to verse 17. Folly's invitation. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. And somehow, the sense of what is stolen and secret makes her offer all the more appealing. If we go back to the very beginning of temptation, let's have that slide up, Phil, please. Eve heard from the serpent about the benefits of the forbidden fruit. The serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. And so, with that encouragement that the forbidden fruit would, in Proverbs terms, be sweet, when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was a delight to the eyes, that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. And she also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate. Her eyes see good, because her ears have been told, this is good. And of course, as we saw back in that series before Christmas, only God can determine what is good. And her choice there is a choice that humanity has gone on to make mistakenly ever since. We determine our own good. And so, forbidden fruit is the motto of the sophisticated, as one commentator has said. Bread eaten in secret? Well, at one level, this is just innocuous, isn't it? Surely it's the fun of the midnight feast. It's meeting up in the grounds of the house party at 3 a.m. when you're not supposed to be out. It's the fag behind the bike sheds. It's really neither here nor there, surely. No one will know. No one comes to any harm. It's just a bit of fun. Just like that website that everybody's looking at. It's just a bit of fun. Just like dating that non-Christian. Good for my image, but it's not going to go anywhere. It's just a bit of fun. What happens on the business trip or the sports tour? No one will know. What happens on tour stays on tour. It's just a bit of fun. It's easy to mistake wisdom and folly. But secondly, we must not ever mistake wisdom and folly. Phil, you can take that down now, thank you. We must not ever mistake wisdom and folly. While their appeals and their offers sound and look similar, their outcomes could not be more different. And we can sum up those outcomes in one word for each: death or life. Let's think about death first. The offer of folly brings us face to face with a key Bible truth about the attractiveness of temptation. What is stolen and secret. And that reality is that it always turns to dust and ashes in the present. It always leaves you dissatisfied and wanting more. Sweetness sours, and secrets don't remain secret. It may taste all the better for being secret, but all too soon it will be known. Those in the know will speak. Those texts will come to light. The medical examination will reveal something. And as we know, enough is never enough. You find yourself bound on an endless cycle of more, but the reward, the buzz, is never quite the same. Never quite as you remember it. Never quite what you're searching for. Let's have that next slide up, Phil, please. That happiness that you think you were promised and which you were pursuing proves all too elusive. Here's a headline from a newspaper at the beginning of the year. High status job, plenty of money, marriage, children. Sounds like the ideal Tunbridge Wells family life, doesn't it? What so many people around us aspire to, and what we're probably aspiring to ourselves. But where's the happy ending? And in this life, things that we thought were for our good turn out for our benefit, turn out not to be after all. Think about the digital world. Think about social media. In a recent article about the way in which these great technologies are currently being used, Professor Zuboff says, "Once we searched Google, but now Google searches us. Once we thought of digital services as free, but now surveillance capitalists think of us as free." The world is a deceitful place. It tells us what is good. It invites us to buy into what it thinks of as good, whereas it only does us ill, both in the present and in the future. You can take that away now, Phil. Thank you. But of course, if we're going to head off somewhere, if we're going to think about an invitation to a party, we want to know who else is going to be there, don't we? That makes a huge difference. Verse 18. "But he doesn't know that the dead are there." You see, we'll only go if someone we know and like is going. Or if someone we know and don't like is going, maybe we won't go after all. So companions along the way, who else is going to be there really matters. "But he does not know that the dead are there, and her guests are in the depths of Sheol." Do you want your life to be a living death? Do you want to find yourself in the place of the dead? That is what Sheol is in Old Testament terms. Without the opportunity to leave it? This is the reality of the contrast between the glamour that is being offered you by folly and its reality. If you want to see that captured brilliantly in 21st century terms, watch the documentary on Netflix on the Fire Festival, F-Y-R-E, if you want to follow it up. It's absolutely fascinating, but it is exactly this point. Promising you the earth and delivering nothing. You see, the Bible is telling you that folly will be offering you tickets to her party. But you've got to remember, she's got no free passes out of death. No free passes out of death. Let's turn then to life. Life is what you get if you follow wisdom. Verse 6, leave your simple ways and live, and walk in the way of insight. Verse 11, for by me your days will be multiplied, and years will be added to your life. You see, this is what knowledge means. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Knowing God. The truth about life from the Creator himself. Learning to learn from the Creator. A willingness to be corrected by him and his words. Recognizing that there's always more to go. There's always further to travel. It was very interesting piece by the BBC's tennis correspondent on the radio this morning, talking about Rafa Nadal and the way in which he'd managed to come back from so many injuries over the years. And they said the reason that he was willing to change things like his serve was simply because he always wanted to improve. And okay, it didn't go very well for him today, but that principle is critical, isn't it? Always wanting to improve. Willing to be corrected. Willing to know more. And look at the insight, look at the understanding we get in verse 10, because for the first time, we begin to see who it is behind wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. For by me, by the Holy One, your days will be multiplied, and years will be added to your life. You see, it's only the Creator who can give life. Others may offer it to you, but all they can do is give you some pale imitation, some mockery of the reality. And notice the promise here of days and years in verse 11. In the Old Testament, the understanding was that long life was a blessing from God. And so the way to enjoy God's blessing is to live under his word, to live by wisdom. Remembering, of course, that the blessings of life go way beyond our deaths. They're not just for the present, but they're for all eternity. And that, of course, is picked up very strongly in the New Testament. In the first chapter of Ephesians, Paul says to us, we have every spiritual blessing in Christ. Jesus tells us that he and he alone has the words of eternal life. Words that will give us the best possible framework for living our life today. Words also that will see us through into the next part and stage of our life with him. But of course, maybe greatest of all, Jesus has conquered death. He and he alone holds the keys to death and Hades. They bow to his lordship. And knowing him, we do have that free pass through death to eternity. We have that free pass out of eternal punishment. Let's have the final slide up, Phil, please. So you see, Jesus is our wisdom and our righteousness, our sanctification and our redemption. He and he alone can bring us that rescue we need. He and he alone can fit us, not just for this life, but for the life of the world to come. because he is the power of God and the wisdom of God. So if you haven't yet set your feet on a particular path, if you are still walking somewhat aimlessly, open to many suggestions as to what may be the course of your life, then think very carefully about what folly and wisdom are offering you, both now and in eternity. And if you have chosen Jesus, maybe this is a good moment to think how you can be more committed to the way of wisdom, your ears more open to his insight, more aware of the correction that you need to hear and act on from him, and more certain that Jesus has won your life through his death. Wisdom or folly? Life or death? Jesus or not? You choose.